All right, here we go. Off we go. To the Wild West Show, the elephants, lions, and kangaroos. Gotta be honest with you, Freach. I'm not really sure I remember how to do this.
Too long a break.
Too long a break. I don't know about you, but I crave the discipline of doing something regularly.
I find the longer I go without working. Now, I will tell you this. There's two big lotteries in Canada as we do this. There's did anyone win the $70 million on Tuesday?
Got me. I never pay attention to that stuff.
Will anyone win the $70 million on Tuesday? Brampton, Ontario?
Brampton. Oh, wow. Okay.
Well, there's also a $25 million one.
Not worth my time.
Yeah, seriously. What's the point? So when I was younger, I never saw myself retiring. And there are people who know me now who still say I can't retire. I could now.
Really?
Yes, I could now. But if I go on a vacation, like even a short break, and I come back to work, I'm really rusty.
I was out for 6 days and I could feel it on radio. That I was like fighting with my tongue, fighting with my brain, just trying to organize things. Because you just get into grown-up world, which is organizing children. And try to find some energy to do something with your own life. Although kids are a big part of your life, obviously. And I just find when I go back to work, it's a tough transition. And podcasts allow you the freedom to take as long as you want to work out your ideas. Unlike, you know, the demands of time, there's an authority of time that happens with radio and happens with television. Here we have the luxury of being able to be wordy. I find it hard to get back to. And I'm away from it for a while. You same? You're nodding, not speaking.
I'm not going to help you being too wordy because I'm not going to talk.
All right, let's talk about Peter Laviolette then because that's the headline as we come back. There's a lot of things that we missed while we were gone, but let's jump in with Peter Laviolette. He's out. John Hines is in. Elliot Friedman says,
this was something we'd sniffed out in the sense that if Nashville was going to make a coaching change, it was likely going to be John Hines. I knew he played with Jeff Kelty, the assistant general manager in Boston University. I didn't realize they were roommates. That was a new one to me. I think if you take a look at it, there's a lot of circumstantial evidence why this was going to be the case if they made the change. Number one, David Poile is a big USA Hockey booster, has become an even bigger USA Hockey booster. This is a guy, John Hines, who has some connection to it. He hired Peter Laviolette after they worked together on a world championship team. Number two, you know, David Poile is tight with both Ray Shiro, who worked for him, and Tom Fitzgerald, who captained the Predators under him. It was easy for him to get all the intel he wanted. And number three is with any situation, there's a financial thing here. And they have to pay Peter Laviolette for another year and a half at his remaining salary this year and $2.5 million-ish next year. I think John Hines is at $1.8 million this year. So you've got to pay a chunk of that. You don't have to pay all of it. You've got to pay a chunk of it. Mm-hmm. I think that's one of the things, like Peter DeBoer, who they did not ask for permission to talk to, he's at 3 or 3.25. So you're paying more if you hire Peter DeBoer.
Right.
Who I thought would have been a great hire for them. If you want Mike Babcock, who's making 6.25, you've got, what are the Maple Leafs going to ask you to pay as part of that? Now, people say, well, they could just pay a dollar and the Leafs would have to pay the rest. You can't do that. The league does have...
Didn't Florida try a sneaky one like that once upon a time?
I think a couple of teams did.
Yeah.
And the league has a kind of formula. Basically, you have to say, this is what this guy's market value would be.
Right.
And you kind of have to pay around that. I know the one situation where that changed a bit was Columbus and John Tortorella. At least when he was still getting paid by Vancouver, Columbus played about $600,000 or $700,000 initially. But this was a guy they knew really well. They were getting they could get good intel on him. You go with the guy you know as best as you possibly can, right?
I've always maintained that if you're a coach, your goaltender can win you the Jack Adams and your goaltender can also get you fired and you can do nothing about it.
You were the one who got Sportsnet stats to do this.
I sent Steve Fellin a text. Great work by me.
Yeah, well, you know, it's very hard work. Like, you know, you didn't have to send the text, Jeff. You sent it. If you look at it, and you did, in the last 2 years, only one team has fired their coach, not counting Calgary and Dallas, because those are unique situations.
We're talking about performance-based firings.
Yes. Only one team has fired their coach where their goalie save percentage was above 900, and that was last year's Ducks under the inhuman John Gibson. Everybody else was under 8. I was under 9, yeah. And I didn't realize the Flyers were down to 874 when Dave Haxtell got fired, and Carter Hart was called up right after that. So it's Alain Vigneault's old line. If your goalie's better than my goalie, you win. If my goalie's better than your goalie,
yeah,
I win.
And you can make the argument, too, that John Hines was undone by goaltending as well in New Jersey, and now he finds himself in a situation in Nashville where that coach... And listen, I understand that I'm being overly simplistic about it.
I don't know if you really are.
Well, I don't know, man. I mean, those two positions are so tightly linked, and it's got to be... You know, I'm putting myself... You know, get the news from your tweet the other day when Peter Laviolette... is dismissed, and I start thinking...
We should say the Predators broke that. I didn't break that.
Fair. Yours was the first tweet that I saw, but you had the first bit of information. Yours popped up on my phone. And I can't help thinking to myself that as a... I try to put myself in a coach's headspace, knowing that, A, goaltenders don't end up behind the bench as head coaches. They don't. I mean, you can count them on one hand.
Jerry Cheevers.
Emil Francis, Patrick Waugh, Glenn Hanlon. But, I mean, Scott Gorton. But really,
not
comparatively,
a lot.
They don't end up behind the bench.
Yes.
And many coaches will tell you, I don't understand goaltenders.
John Tortorella.
I don't get goalies. Don't ask me about the goalie. That's not my job. But it has to be frustrating in that the one position that can either take you to the top of your industry, Stanley Cup, Jack Adams Trophy, can also completely undo all of your work, and you can do exactly nothing about it. That has to be the most helpless feeling in the world. No matter what you do, no matter systems, no matter power play, no matter what you put together, it can be all undone by something that you're not in control of.
And John Tortorella's big rant against that clock, you know what that was all about? Korpisalo getting hurt.
Yes. Now, there's some found money in Elvis Merz Lickens, and we'll get to Columbus in a couple of moments, too. But your point is the right one. So is it that simple for Peter Laviolette that he got goalied, as we like to call it now?
It's never that simple. I mean, the power play has been historically poor over a couple of years now. Penalty killing wasn't good either. Those were two of the things I checked. Now, I saw some people online, and I don't know where I saw this. It was kind of retweeted into my timeline, and I really am careful with how much time I spend poring over Twitter now. I'm really trying to control this. But, you know, saying that Peter Laviolette was not a good offensive coach. Mm-hmm. The one thing is, if you look at Nashville, I'll ask some team analytic guys I know, tell me what's going on here. Like, what am I missing anything here? Nashville's really good 5-on-5. They're third in the league in 5-on-5 goals as we tape this podcast, behind Toronto and Colorado. Colorado number one, 7 more than them. And Nashville, like, unlike the Maple Leafs, who get like no power play time, Nashville's got a ton of it. So they're scoring at really good rates 5-on-5. So I don't think the offense is the problem. They're plus 20 5-on-5. They're minus 19 everywhere else. Mm-hmm. That, to me, is their problem. Between that and goaltending, they have to fix that. If you look at Hines, under him in New Jersey, and whether it was him or an assistant coach, their penalty kill was always good with 1 year exception. 1 year they were 24th, but they had 3 top 10s, including a 4th. Their power play has been kind of weird. They have 2 top 10s and like a 21st and a 22nd. But I think if you can fix your penalty kill for the Predators, that's going to be a huge thing for you. And he's got success with it.
You think it's just a sidebar here, and you mentioned New Jersey, thought just popped in my head. If you're Alain Nezradin, are you kind of kicking yourself? Like, if you got fired with John Hines, you could both be behind the bench in Nashville now.
No way.
Instead of being the interim with New Jersey?
No.
No? Erase that?
I would erase that. You know, you want to be a head coach. I'm sure he wants to be a head coach. He's actually doing not a bad job.
That's right.
Like, they look like they have Blackwood there. And he's starting to come on. They really believe in Blackwood. I don't know if they think this is the right thing for him, but he's getting baptism by fire for sure, and he's doing pretty well. Like, I got to wonder, if you're New Jersey and you're really committing to a rebuild, you know, the way it's going under Nezradin, I got to think he's got a good shot at the job, don't you?
Hit pause on New Jersey. I knew we were going to go down a road here with the Devils. Hit pause on next. I want to focus on Nashville. Let me ask you just point blank. Do you think they're a better team than we've seen?
Yes.
You don't think the volume of trades is starting to catch up to them?
Not necessarily, because it's not like they've been trading bad players in.
But they've moved out.
Well, look, for Seth Jones, they got Ryan Johansson. For Seth Jones, they got Ryan Johansson. For Shea Weber, they had PK for a while. Now, isn't it interesting how history is starting to judge that trade?
Completely opposite.
Yeah, it's changing. You know, I mean, they've brought in good players, at least. They lost Ryan Suter for nothing, and I think one thing that taught them is we're never doing that again. Now, I think the one thing is we're going to find out this Kyle Turris thing. Is this a coaching thing that somehow Turris and Laviolette were oil and water and he's suddenly going to be a better player now that Laviolette's gone? That is huge for Nashville.
He was a different player in the World Championships last year.
And, you know, I go back to that year in Ottawa where they went to the Eastern Conference Final. He was so good. Like, I think there's a better player there. Now, the one thing I will say is you ask Kyle Turris to people off the record so you can get an unvarnished opinion, you get a lot of different reactions. Some positive, some negative. I like him. I've always liked him. I think there's a kid who looks quiet, but he's tough and he's got pride and he cares. And I've always liked watching his game. I've always felt he was a better player. I have no idea what's happened to him the last 2 years.
You left out the word skilled, by the way.
Oh, yeah, of course. Yeah.
Skilled.
Of course, skill is important. I thought that goes without saying. I really got the sense if you watch David Poile's one scrum where he talked or was asked about Turris at length this year, he was exasperated with the situation. And I've got to think the whole Turris thing played a big role in the change. And I think that's going to be huge for Nashville to see if they can turn this around. Can John Hines get to Kyle Turris where Peter Laviolette didn't?
So I was talking to someone about player tracking last week.
Okay.
And this is someone who's quite close to it.
Yeah.
And I said, what are you most curious about? And he said, I'm most curious about two players. I'm curious, like, what is this going to tell us? Who is this going to expose? Who is this going to shine? And he said, there are two goaltenders that I'm really curious about, and we're going to get a more accurate snapshot of them when player tracking comes in. And I said, who's that? And he said, Carey Price and Pekka Rinne, to see if they've slowed down. I think player tracking is going to teach us a lot about things.
I agree.
Like passing. I think it's going to teach us a lot about shots. I think it's probably going to prove that you don't have to have a great shot to be an effective goal scorer in the NHL. I think it's going to teach us a lot about goaltenders. And I wonder about those two specifically to this guy that I was talking to. I agree. I wonder how much slower those two are now. Specifically than they have been, because they look like different goalies.
Well, I agree with that. I don't think there's any doubt about that. When I look at Nashville and their future, and Poile has been trying to do things. There's no question about that. I think he's had Turris out there. We all know that. He's had Craig Smith out there. I tend to believe he's had Michael Granlund out there, although I can't prove that. Toivonen was another guy. I actually forgot to put him in my notes this week. I think he's been out there too. Mm-hmm. The big question for me there is he willing to go more than that?
To go deeper?
Yeah.
If they indeed turn into sellers?
Well, look, he's not trading Yossi. He's not trading Ekholm. He's not trading Ellis.
Dante Fabro?
He's not trading that guy. Why would you trade that guy? Are you trading Victor Arvidsson? I don't think so.
Philip Forsberg?
I don't think so.
Cali Yarncroak?
Maybe. Maybe. I don't know. I mean, Ryan Johansson's got 5 more years at $8 million per. Matt Duchene is in year one of a 7-year deal. You know, the guy who I think would be interesting is Bonino. He's a center. He's $4.1 million, which is very reasonable.
How many more years left? Two?
One.
One.
I mean, you could make that deal easy. Mm-hmm. Easy. The thing is, you're not you're not making that deal unless it's a we're giving up deal or we're doing something else as part of it, because you're not making yourself better to compete for a Stanley Cup if you're trading Nick Bonino, probably.
And that becomes a question now for David Poile. Like, at what point do you make the decision, okay, we're in, we're going for it? This is why the next few games here for the Nashville Predators are crucial under John Hines. And he comes in, yeah, the Boston game is the Boston game, and Pasternak kicks off the fun, and it's away we go, Boston Bruins. But that's his first game in. He hasn't had a chance to work with the team. But at a certain point, isn't David Poile going to have to make the decision, okay, I know we've added. Last year, we added. Maybe this is the year you take that one step back at trade deadline. He's got to be thinking it, no?
He said he was thinking about, are we going to be a seller?
Radio interview, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we really got some soul searching to do right now. I mean, I have got to do some real thinking about where we're going here for the rest of this year. I mean, I think there's a lot of people I want to talk to about different things. We're going to have I'm staying in Dallas here because we brought all of our scouts in, and we're going to start right after I get off this call with our scouting meetings, both amateur and pro. We'll be talking about the future on the amateur side. We'll be talking about the trade deadline on the pro side. You know, right now we are not in the playoffs, and I am open for business, if you will.
But when you have that core, are you selling or are you reloading?
You're reloading. You're not selling because you're not getting rid of any of the big boys.
Yeah.
Everyone's still in place.
Right.
You're picking around the edges. I think Granlund might be the most intriguing name that you mentioned, by the way. Him and Bonino may fetch the most out of all those guys.
Then you're reloading.
On that, we'll start officially. Welcome to 31 Thoughts, the podcast, brought to you by the all-new GMC Sierra trucks.
McDavid out there now. He's joined by Ryan Nugent-Hopkins, Adam Larson, and Oscar Klefbom.
A half minute left in the 4-on-4. Kerfoot, pass, intercepted, and McDavid. Here comes Connor McDavid against Morgan Rielly.
McDavid, beat him.
Shifting right by Rielly. Right in. What a goal!
Rich shot, score, beautiful move. Connor McDavid danced around Morgan Rielly. What a play, what a goal!
My goodness, what a goal!
That is a highlight reel goal if I've ever seen one.
Absolutely undressed him. And he just was not going to be denied. He's been all over this game all night long. He's had his feet going. Look at this. He looks back. What a fake. And that's Morgan Rielly. A terrific defenseman. And he walks around him. The celebration afterwards. Just nobody with him. You know what? I'll do this myself. Thanks a lot. Puts it into high gear. And under that much speed, in tight, elevates it over top of Hutchinson. What a goal by Connor McDavid.
Connor McDavid, yet another goal of the year candidate right there. Wow.
Only a handful of days into the decade for each, did we already see the goal of the decade. Connor McDavid turning around Morgan Rielly and scoring afterwards. Listen, I know you used to cover basketball in a different lifetime, so I'll just get that out of the way. Did we just see basketball on ice?
Pretty much. The spacing was exactly that. Put it this way, the people who do hits of the week or plays of the week or plays of the year or plays of the month, we've got all these shows here at Sportsnet.
Yeah.
They just got an easy one.
Here's some candy.
Here's some candy. File that one away for next December. So first of all, I watched the goal and I have to rewind my what did I just see? And the second thing is, I think the actual goal itself, the move he made on Hutchinson, is getting shafted by the rest of the play. Like, everybody's forgetting how he put it in the net. And the third thing is, you know, I went to the website to watch Rielly out his scrum after the game. And, you know, Morgan Rielly is just one of the nicest guys around.
Yeah.
And as he knows, as he goes out, he's going to have to answer this. And the moment the one reporter brings it up, he's just got this look on his face like, hurry up with the question already so I can give you my canned answer.
Yeah, obviously a good player. But, I mean, it's more than that. It's a team game, so obviously tough loss, but we've been going good for a while now. So, you know, we'll regroup tomorrow and we're back at it.
Here's another thing about McDavid. His smile to success ratio is very low. He's almost never smiling.
Dale Hunter-esque.
Well, I just think he's a quiet guy.
Yeah.
And plus, also, they've gone through a lot of losing, right? And, you know, this is his home rink in Toronto, and he never scored there, and he hadn't had a ton of success there. It was nice to see him smiling and happy. And I love, what was that line at the end? It's great to get out of here or something like that?
It's always fun to play here. And it's always fun to leave here as well. So yeah.
Like, I laughed at that. I wish I saw that. And, you know, I think it's all because of the losing. I really do. And I find it hard to blame him. Like, I do know that in Edmonton, there have been complaints both externally and internally about the way he looks in his interviews. Okay. And my opinion on that is it's hard to be happy or look happy when you've only been to the playoffs once in 4 or 5 years of your career, whichever one this one is. Because if he looked happy, people would probably rip him for looking happy when the team's not doing well. But I know this is a conversation out there, so it was nice to see him smiling like that after a game. By the way.
Yes.
I knew you were about to talk.
It's okay.
There is one person out there who has brought it to my attention that Connor McDavid's Twitter feed, his last two likes are Toronto Maple Leaf tweets. And he is convinced for this reason that Connor McDavid wants to be a Maple Leaf.
Is that person fan producer Sam McKee?
No, but you told me the story.
Because he could not point that out to me last week on radio fast enough when I got to the shop.
But I just have to say that that's why his response of "it's great to get out of here" made me laugh. I'm glad to see a guy like that happy. That's what it is.
Listen, it's been challenging for Connor McDavid, and it's been challenging for a while. Like, let's consider a couple things here. When's the last time? I mean, world championships certainly. But when's the last time Connor McDavid won?
They have one playoff berth.
Minor hockey.
And you'll remember that was a tough playoff for him, too, because initially when they were playing San Jose, they weren't giving him the matchups. They were taking him off ice for certain matchups. And I remember we showed at the beginning of a game once, he didn't get the opening faceoff because they didn't want him out there. I think it was against Couture. And you could see how frustrated he was. And I'll say this, as much as he can look frustrated, Draisaitl opponents say looks even more frustrated, and you know you're getting to him.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's the thing. I think that it's tough because you want your leaders to be optimistic and positive, but when you've done that much losing, it's very hard to be optimistic and positive, and someone's going to rip you if you are.
You know, I'm handing away a story idea for someone here, but somewhere down the road, what I want to do is a piece, probably better for video than anything else, on the best goals, fights, assists, hits in every building around the NHL. And when it comes to Air Canada Center / Scotiabank Arena, for me, that McDavid goal is rivaled only by Nathan MacKinnon, Henrik Lundqvist at the World Cup of Hockey.
Mm, that whole shift
was fantastic.
In on Gostis there. Daniel misfired. Had an open net. Looked like he had daylight to shoot at, and he couldn't handle the pass. McKinnon's back the other way. Takes the shot. Lundqvist made the save with his shoulder. Gostis there was up there with him. There's a breakaway pass to center. Daniel Sedin alone. Great save by Gibson. And back come the North Americans with a minute to go. Nathan MacKinnon, Johnny Gaudreau, great move, shoots. Lundqvist fought that off, and here they come again. At center, Henrik Sedin was all alone. McKinnon's all alone. He shoots. He scores.
You know, like at the old Maple Leaf Gardens, the Pete Mihaljevic goal in 72 on Tretiak was probably the best goal scored in that building. I would say Kurtenbach and Harper or Clark and Tockett were the best fights.
I was at that game, Clark and Tockett.
That was ridiculous.
Yeah.
But as far as ACC / Scotiabank Arena, for me, it's between those two goals. I remember just listening, and everyone's going to have that moment. Everyone's going to have their own recollection. I remember watching that goal the other day and thinking to myself, I'm watching basketball. It is a basketball play.
Spacing.
It's incredible. You know, been waiting for a while now because I covered him extensively in junior hockey when he played with the Erie Otters. Connor McDavid would do this thing where he would play with his speed. So he'd grab the puck in his own zone, okay, and right away, defenseman, bailing, see ya, showing the nameplate. And he'd approach neutral zone at about three-quarter speed. And then he'd get to the neutral zone, and by the time he got to center ice, he'd start to slow down a bit, and defenseman would close gap right around the blue line. And when they got close enough, he hit that gear, and he was gonzo. And he burned so many guys like that all through his junior hockey career. He just that much faster than everybody else. Are we now here with Connor McDavid starting to see him play with his speed like he did in junior? Because it was dynamic. It was spectacular. And it was every game. It was every single game.
How do you say he hasn't been able to do that already?
He's been blazing guys, but it's been like right from the get-go, just gonzo, just trying to breathe. Just like, there's a confidence you get. You know this, for like after a few years.
Yeah.
You can start to, okay, you know what? I'm not just going to go full pedal down. And we've seen Connor McDavid full pedal down since the get-go in the NHL. And I've been waiting for him to start to play with that speed. I'm not going to go full speed here. I'm going to slow it down. I'm going to draw a guy and then burn him. Saw it in junior all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching that play against Riley. And I'm like, are we getting that next level Connor McDavid now 5 seasons in?
You know, I honestly don't know how to answer that, just simply because I'm used to seeing him do almost whatever he wants.
At top speed.
Yeah, yeah.
Play with your speed now. Really mix guys up.
Okay, I mean, I'll watch. I'll keep an eye out.
Take a little off your fastball every now and then.
My fastball comes in at 56 kilometers an hour.
We should mention, by the way, a little bit later on in the podcast, Theo Fleury, who has a new podcast, will be joining us here in a couple of moments.
You know, I think it's going to be interesting. So, you know, Edmonton, they didn't want to do Hall.
They did. They just didn't like the price.
They didn't want to give up what they had to give up.
You hear Ken Holland on 590 the other day?
The time is now. The time is now to compete for a playoff spot. My goal over the next 2 or 3 years is to try to make us deeper, better than we are today. But certainly when you got Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, Nugent Hopkins, Nurse, Klefbom, the time to compete for a playoff spot is now. And if we can get in, much like last year where Columbus knocked off Tampa and somebody knocked off Calgary and where Edmonton went in a playoff run 3 years ago, you just got to get in. And then it's a brand new season. So certainly on the short term, try to make the playoffs in 19-20. Over the next 2 or 3 years, become deeper, become better, so that maybe we can have better regular seasons. But I don't know that a better regular season means that you're going to go on a longer playoff run. Maybe it means that you just have a little less stress in January and February, but you're always going to have stress. And once you get in the playoffs, it's wide open.
I'll tell you this. People can say what they want to say. You've actually got to do it.
Right? And that's never been how Ken Holland's conducted business.
You have to see this. Like, you can't see this right now, listener, but as Merrick says that, he's got this stupid little grin on his face. Like,
Voltairean,
I told you.
Voltairean smile.
I told you that this. Ken Holland says that.
Yeah.
But if he really wanted to do that or believed it, he would have traded for Taylor Hall.
No, because to your point, he didn't want those prices in Arizona.
But that's the point I'm trying
prices.
To make. Like, they're always in playoff mode, yes, but they're not going to do it at any cost. Like, the one thing about Jim Rutherford is he's done it at any cost, and it's worked for them. Like, there was a point last couple of years where they had nothing left to trade, really. I heard last year that teams were asking about Caleb Addison, who played pretty well for Canada at the World Juniors. Now he looks like he's going to be a player for them. But I don't believe that he's treating it as all out go for it. I think he's treating it now as, yeah, but I do think he's starting to say, what can I do to help us for short term? You know, like all of a sudden he's starting to make a bit more noise about maybe does he do a rental? but I don't think it's a big time rental. It's not the kind of rental that necessarily, it's not a Taylor Hall rental. It's the next level, whatever. It's not even a Chris Kreider rental. Maybe it's a Tyler Toffoli rental.
Jean-Gabriel Pageau rental.
I think that's going to be a big price. I think that's going to cost you a first rounder. He's a center.
I know. And he had,
you're not getting,
and he had a great November.
You're not getting a Jean-Gabriel Pageau for what?
So here's my scenario then. This is all fine to talk about at the beginning of January.
Mm-hmm.
It's the weekend before the trade deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And Edmonton's 2 points out.
Then maybe they go get someone. But the thing is, you know, like, you're not making that deal without having some sort of trade protection in place. You know, I have always believed that until proven otherwise, until somebody convinces me otherwise, that Ken Holland is out there saying, I'll take another high first round pick. I'll take another lottery pick. Now, maybe that changes. You know, one of the things that is interesting there next year is that they got the World Juniors there next year.
They do.
So how many people are going to look at their ticket packages and say, am I buying for the 2020-2021 Oilers or am I buying the World Juniors? Because those World Juniors tickets,
they're not cheap.
They're not cheap. Only in this podcast, only Jeff Mara can afford them.
My money makes noise in my pocket. Elliot's is nice and quiet. That's, he's got the long cash.
Because I don't care. I don't carry cash. I just have a banker.
Mine jingles as I walk down the street. Elliot is nice and silent.
Cash is king. I look at it this way. I don't believe that the Oilers this year, Ken Holland saw it as, I got to make the playoffs. He's in year one of a 5-year deal. He's making $5 million per. I'll get another draft pick. Okay. But now they're starting to move. They're in the race. The World Juniors are there next year. Do people hold off on their Oilers tickets and go buy for that instead? You're only human, right?
Hang on.
I do wonder about all this.
Is part of the cheese in that trap, if you're the Oilers, making the playoffs this year? We're building on next season. Like, if it's another season, if you're the Oilers and you don't make the playoffs, what's the appetite to buy?
Well, that's the point.
Oh, this again. That's what I'm saying. Like, you go out and you get, do something to get your team. And listen, maybe it just happens naturally. Maybe it just happens like this team is turning a corner and the save percentages are going to go up and there's going to be some found money down the lineup and it just happens for you because it might happen in that division. It just might. But if it doesn't,
I think that's all part of it. Like, you know, one team I think that I watch now, two teams actually I kind of watch now and say, how is business going to affect their decisions, are Buffalo and Philly. See, this is a whole other conversation too. Like,
okay.
The change in the game where there's no fighting anymore and there's not a lot of hate in the regular season, I think it affects those two cities as much as anywhere else in the league.
Philadelphia, I can see specifically.
Buffalo too. Buffalo's a blue-collar town, and you know the other thing, too, is Buffalo's attendance is down. But did you see their Winter Classic ratings? Number one.
Always.
Number one.
But they're all. But that's a constant.
But the thing is, listen, what I'm saying is, Buffalo, a team that hasn't made the playoffs, similar drought to Edmonton, their fans love hockey, but they're not going to the building.
There's only one thing that's worse than that, is tickets that are bought, and the person doesn't show up.
Yeah.
That to me is always, I can understand a ticket that goes unsold. I think you're in real trouble when people have bought tickets and are choosing not to show up. Then it's disaster.
That's bad for you.
That's disaster.
That's really bad. It's also saying that they can't get rid of their ticket to somewhere else. Like the story that I remember about the Blue Jays is, when the Blue Jays first opened Sky Dome and they had a powerhouse there when they were winning World Series teams, their math told them that they could fill an 80,000-seat stadium every night. So they had 50,000 people at the Dome, and there were 30,000 people that wanted to get in and couldn't. Mm-hmm. And where does that all go? And I do think the change in the game, and look, I've had this conversation with Brandon Shanahan. With what we know about concussions now, you can't ask people to do that job. And I think the general public is less understanding of those kinds of less understanding in terms of those injuries are part of your sport. They are, but people don't want to accept that answer. And I think the change affects some cities more than others. And I think, you know, Philly hasn't won in a while. They haven't been going to the playoffs. Buffalo hasn't won in a while. They haven't been going to the playoffs. I think that hurts.
Just as an aside, my own personal thought on it is people are attracted to the danger of hockey. They see the danger, but they hate the reality that is sometimes when it's dangerous,
of course,
people get hurt.
That's exactly what it is. It's true.
You can't have one without the other.
There's no stomach for the injuries anymore. The NFL is having an unbelievable television year. Unbelievable television year. Their ratings are way up. When you look at basketball in the States, their ratings are way down. The NFL, which was the sport under siege a year or two ago, it seemed like their ratings are way up. And, you know, I think that in Canada, too, it's been affected. The lack of hate in the regular season, I think it affects the attendance and the viewership. I do.
You mentioned the Philadelphia Flyers. That is a team that is night and day, home and on the road. Maybe the most pronounced of anyone. At Wells Fargo, I don't have it in front of me. I think they've only lost three games. It's spectacular. On the road, they cannot win. They just finished up a road trip as well, lost another game. What happens with the Philadelphia Flyers? Like, as I look around teams, and now a lot of this conversation on the podcast is going to be directed towards trade deadline. Next couple of weeks are crucial. What is happening with our squad? Because all of a sudden, even though they have the tiebreaker, as we record this podcast, Columbus has caught them. Columbus Blue Jackets have caught the Philadelphia Flyers for a wild card.
John Tortorella, is this the best coaching job he's ever done?
So far, based on personnel. Like, look, I wanted to get to Columbus on this pod.
So we said this. You know why he was so mad that night?
Because he lost his goalie.
Yeah, but and I heard that there were conversations in the organization about, because he was just in the stretch, he started 10 games in 20 days. And I heard that in the organization, they're talking about, He's going to get hurt. And then, damn, he goes and gets hurt. Mm-hmm. And Elvis hadn't won a game up to that point.
Like 0-4-1.
And he's now won 4 or 5. And those guys, they always play hard. They never cheat you.
But they're doing it with players like Kevin Stenland, Jacob Lilja, Emil Bemström, Eric Robinson. Like these, I assure you, outside of Columbus, are not household names around the NHL. Like, there's a lot of people scrambling to their NHL pronunciation guide when they're watching a Columbus Blue Jackets game, trying to figure out.
I can figure out how to pronounce Eric Robinson.
Yeah, that might be the only one. But Emil Bemström.
Yeah.
I mean, like, there is, and by the way, that guy can hammer the puck. I'm just waiting for that guy to get more comfortable because his one-timers are disgusting. But you're right. Like, he's been able to, and listen, Zach Werenski's on a different planet, right? Zach Werenski's got 15 goals.
Yep.
I'll always go back to that year where Columbus had the ridiculous power play. Sam Gagner.
Yeah. Like, for the first half of the season.
The first half, it was Islanders 81, Habs 77 level of power play. It was ridiculous. So I might always go back to that as the best performance that we've seen from behind the bench for John Tortorella. But this is outstanding. Like, and there's another team. Like, there's a team that went after Mitch Marner in the summer.
Yep.
So I have a hard time believing that, oh, we didn't get him, so I'm just going to sit on my hands all year.
Well, people have been saying all year that Jarmo Kekalainen's been waiting for the right moment. Now, I think you kind of have to figure out, is it worth doing it? I can't see them doing rentals again. Like, we can have this discussion for the millionth time. I completely supported what they did last year. There's times you have to go for it. That was their time.
But you can't do it 2 years.
But you can't do it that much. So if you're going to add, you think he's adding for term. But he likes to look. You know, their goalie situation is so wild that last week, Brad Thiessen, who's their coach, their goalie coach in the American Hockey League, he played. He had to dress, and they played Milwaukee, who's number one in the AHL, and they beat them 5-4. And Thiessen's not that old. He's 33. I looked it up, but he hadn't played all year. And because they're short guy, and this happened to him last year, too. He threw on the equipment late in the season, too.
Mm-hmm.
But that's, I mean, their whole organization is tight in terms of depth. And they're grinding away at it. The Gavrikov defenseman, like,
yeah.
I remember they fought to get him over. Like, Kekalainen, I didn't know a lot about him. I remember I asked him once, he says, that guy's going to be a player and we have to get him over here. And he's really good.
As much as we focus on players like Matthew Barzal, Mikhail Sergachev in the offseason as RFAs coming out of their entry-level deal, what's Pierre-Luc Dubois going to cost them?
It's going to cost them a lot of money.
But what's a lot of money?
Well, it's going to start with a six at least, maybe more. The one thing about Columbus is they're grinders. They grind you on deals. Negotiations with them are tough. Werenski's negotiation with them.
He ended up going short term.
That was a tough negotiation. Venberg was a tough negotiation, although that one unfortunately hasn't worked out for them.
Yeah.
Seth Jones was a bit, I don't know if easier is the right word, but he got signed right after Ekblad got that big deal in Florida. And I do remember, because I remember I reported the Ekblad deal about a week or two before it was going to happen, and someone from Columbus called me and said, are you sure about that?
Because they were scared.
And I was like, yeah, it's going to happen. And, you know, I can't repeat the various words that were on that phone call after that. Josh Anderson's up this year.
Yeah.
That's going to be, the next one there is going to be interesting. They hardlined him last time.
That's right, because he
was
didn't go to training camp because he didn't have the deal. And that was that the same year as Andreas Athanasiou?
Yeah, same agent too.
Both Darren Ferris clients.
Yes.
And they're both.
Yes.
Right. You mentioned Aaron Ekblad a second ago.
But can I just say something?
Yeah.
Tortorella? You know, in this whole thing that's been going on, the reckoning, as we're all kind of calling it now, coaching, I heard the NHL called him and said, is there anything we need to know here? And I think a lot of people were really curious because you knew the microphones were going to be stuck in Anthony Duclair's face. And, you know, Anthony Duclair, I thought, really stood up and said, yeah, I know why everyone's asking, but it's not as bad as it looked. I didn't like that, obviously, but it's not as bad as it looked. And I think we all kind of wondered as all this was going on, I think a lot of people thought that John Tortorella was going to be affected. Now, I do know one thing. I know that last summer when they lost a lot of their key players, I shouldn't say a lot of their key players, but when they lost a lot of the guys they brought in and they lost Panarin and Bobrovsky, he did say internally that he was going to have to be different. Because he knew the team would be younger and he couldn't explode like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when they came in earlier in the season, Nick Foligno did say that there were some times where he saw Mount Tortorella getting close and it didn't erupt. Now, I did hear recently there was a time he wasn't too happy with the way they played. And someone said to me, apparently, like he went in there and it's like, apparently I'm supposed to be a nice guy now. Well, screw it. You guys are terrible tonight. But I think the players... There's no question he has made an effort to adapt, recognize this team's going to be a little bit different. But I think it's really interesting. I think the league reached out to him and asked him, is there anything here we need to know?
You mentioned Josh
Anderson. I think the answer was no.
You mentioned Josh Anderson a second ago, and that's someone who's completely unique. Not everybody. Once upon a time, there was a bunch of Josh Andersons around the NHL. Everybody had themselves a Josh Anderson.
Yep.
Not anymore.
Like well, we talked about the hate's kind of gone.
I'm curious
right?
about that contract.
In the regular season.
Right? I remember the first time that he really popped for a lot of people, to use a Brian Burke term, popped, is when he challenged Chara in that Columbus-Boston game. And the thing that was frightening about it was, we talked about spacing a second ago with Connor McDavid, one of the more terrifying things I've always felt about fighting someone like Zdeno Chara is when there's space between the two of you and you have to skate to each other to engage. Like we saw Jakob Trenin.
Yeah, all respect to
Chara.
Guy.
All respect for that right. When have we seen Chara buckle?
Cross ice. Floater. Tura's trying to get it. And then Trenin just absolutely crushed McAvoy. And Chara's going to take issue. Trenin going at Federer. The 42-year-old Chara against the 22-year-old Trenin.
I would not
Oh, oh my God. Trent holding his own. I cannot believe Trent just dropped the mitts with Zdeno Chara. He went in there, made contact, crushed. I don't even know who it was on the forecheck.
It was McAvoy. He just leveled McAvoy. And then Chara took issue. And he got a great right hand in.
Dropped the mitts.
Take a look at the punch that Trennan is going to land here.
Oh, my. He buckled. Chara's knees buckled. This is incredible.
I see it.
I wanted the refs to get in there right away. And Trennan is just furious. Right there. Oh. There he goes. It buckles him right there. Oh, my gosh. I can't believe it.
So I remember watching that game with Colby Armstrong. Anderson takes on Chara. And it was almost that I've arrived moment for Josh Anderson, because there's a handful of guys that have the guts to do that, specifically when you have to skate to each other to engage. It's not just part of a scrum and it's spontaneous and you're right in front of them. There was space between the two. That's got to be frightening. Like, what goes through your mind as your gloves are on the ice and the guy you're about to fight,
I hope I survive this,
is a few feet away and you've got to skate to engage? We asked Josh Anderson that last year.
I think just, you know, to relax and try to get a good grip is obviously really important. You kind of want to stare him down and try to get that good grip where you want to, you know, really hold him. But I think really it's just about relaxing, and you don't really see me actually relaxing in a fight after I get hit once. But I don't know. It's something that I've been used to, you know, growing up in junior. I fought a little bit, and then like you said, squaring up against guys, you're not really thinking too much. You're just really thinking, throw them as fast as you can and see if you can get them with a couple.
So Aaron Ekblad, that name just came up. Mm-hmm. And very quietly, he's having a really good year with the Florida Panthers. And I know the Florida lately has taken a little bit of a dip. Tough loss on Tuesday night against the Arizona Coyotes. But do you have a thought or two on Jonathan Huberdeau?
Oh, what a year. Like, didn't you think that Barkov was going to be their all-star forever and ever and ever, amen?
Yes.
And now it's Huberdeau.
The best-kept secret on the left side in the NHL, period.
He's been fantastic.
How good does that contract look right now?
It's a great contract. It looks a little bit better than Bobrovsky's right now.
Just a little bit. What do you think of the Panthers right now?
They lost to Arizona on Tuesday night.
Yeah.
Somebody told me that it was in that press box that it's really wearing on Dale Talon right now. Like, you can see it on his face how unhappy he is with the way it's going.
That's Chris Drieger in net. That was even Bobrovsky.
I guess he's going to play against the Canucks on Thursday night.
This has not worked out yet.
First year of those big deals, it's amazing how many people don't perform up to plan.
We've all had the conversation, the weight of expectation, yeah. I've got to live up to the contract, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
They all talked about we have to defend better. Do you think they defend better?
I think Aaron Ekblad does.
I think he's had a really good year.
He's the guy that stands out for me from all of them is Aaron Ekblad.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been pounded for years. He's taken, and you can say, well, listen, he probably shouldn't have been put in that position to go up there against, you know, first line players every single night for the Florida Panthers. But this season, I don't know what it is. He's healthy. He's mature. I don't know. He's had a really good year so far for the Florida Panthers.
But I don't look at them and say, are they that much better defensively, or is it simply the goalie?
They score goals, and a month and a half ago, they're getting tons of saves. Right? Good December for them.
I don't disagree with
that. But running away right now, and the story in that division is Tampa. Well, eight in a row.
Yep.
Just took apart the Vancouver Canucks, who are themselves on a 7-game rip. Now, Vancouver's
on the
road. I
put $50
on
the Canucks in that game, too.
You did, hey?
Because the odds were good. Like, it was a really good. My odds have
gone. Tough second period
for
you.
I got to tell you, like, my betting has gone really poorly lately. And, you know, this is what happened was. So that night, it was a Saturday night hockey night game. Pittsburgh was in Vancouver, and Brock Besser always scores on Matt Murray. And I was up several hundred dollars on my wagering. I don't bet ridiculous amounts, but I was up about $900 on my wagering.
Woo.
And I put a bet down on Brock Besser to score on Matt Murray that night. And I canceled my bet before the game started. I just said, you know what? Nah, I'm not feeling it. And he scored.
I'll freeze.
And since then, my nest egg has plummeted.
I'm not a gambler. Like, I don't gamble on sports or anything at all.
Mm-hmm.
Is hockey not the toughest sport to gamble on?
No, I think college football is.
Is it?
Yeah.
More than hockey.
Because they're kids, right?
Everyone that I always talk to who gambles always tells me, don't bet on hockey. It's too hard. Though there are props that interest me. There are plenty of prop bets.
Well, that's the thing. I did this prop bet and I would have won.
I get that one. Like I would have done something like that. But as far as like betting on games, that's tough.
Yeah. So Tampa. They're
now, 8 in a row as we record.
So all of my Leafs friends, because I grew up in Toronto, are so excited the Leafs are avoiding Boston, but now they're worried they're going to get Tampa.
Now they want Boston.
I'd spoken to some people there, and I said, you guys are bored, aren't you? Like, you know, it doesn't matter until April. And they're like, it's not true. I mean, I know our results don't look that good, but it's not true. And they felt really strongly. And Julian Breezeball has done a number of interviews lately where he's talked about this. He said that, you know, their underlying numbers, they really believe in them. Mm-hmm. I think the interesting thing is that he mentioned it to a few people that he researched the last 10 trade deadlines. And I did the research because he wouldn't tell me what it was. He's like, I'm not doing your work
for you.
It's a nice
line in your blog. Yeah, that's good.
I'm not doing it for you. You know, it's interesting. Like, the blockbuster at the deadline, the last 3-4 cup winners haven't done it. And nobody who's won the cup has traded their first rounder since 2015. And they're the only one to do it since 2012 at the deadline. So you know what that says to me is that Tampa's sitting there and saying, we're going for it with this roster. We'll see what happens. Because they got two big contracts they've got to sort out between. Like, Anthony Cirelli is leading their forwards in ice time.
Mm-hmm. Gamer. Love him.
And Sergachev is really starting to go.
If McAvoy's, what, 4 and change and Provorov is 6.5, what's Sergachev going to cost?
Well, I think it depends on term, right? Because McAvoy's short term. Yeah. I assume Sergachev does a bridge. Because they don't have the room to give him what he could get.
They're coming into trouble here.
Yeah. So I think he goes for it and sees where they end up, but all of a sudden they're really starting to go.
See, all that stuff about, oh, this team, the team that's won the Stanley Cup hasn't traded their first round pick. Man, it's interesting to look at. It's interesting to read, but I kind of throw all that out. I don't think there's one formula. I don't think that there's one.
So you're basically like ripping my entire blog?
No, all I'm saying is, well, maybe in a sense I am. All I'm saying is I don't think that there's just one way to win. What's the Mark Twain line? History doesn't repeat itself, but sometimes it rhymes.
You know, I think the key thing is if you're going to read it, the key thing to take out, and this is what some of the other guys told me, it's that when you take a look at all the first rounds in the last 4 or 5 drafts, and see who was traded for a first-round pick and how many of those players really were impactful or not in their situations. Mm. That's the alarm bell.
How much of that is people just overvalue their assets?
Could be.
Like, that's the one thing that hockey's always been knocked for, is every general manager, again, wide brush statement here, overvalues what they have. And many say that's why there isn't the volume of trades that there could be or maybe should be in hockey. What do you think that means for trade deadline this year?
I hope nobody pays any attention to what I hope they have the same opinion you do, or else we're going to be sitting there doing nothing.
One of the teams we'll have our eyes on are the Calgary Flames.
Well, you know, I think all of it. I think the Flames, New Jersey. Now, where's Montreal coming in all this now, too?
First of all, Montreal can't win at home, and they can't win one-goal games. They've lost 11 one-goal games now. The last two games they've lost by one goal. They've lost to Detroit 3 times this season. Montreal has. That's staggering.
Yep.
To me.
Can't score.
And can't score.
They need some beef.
Now, by the way, Kovalchuk in 2 games has 3 assists. Very, very small sample size. But I know Anthony Stewart was a big fan of that move, and that's why I mentioned it here on the podcast. But What does Montreal do? You know, Mark Bergevin said, I am not mortgaging the future. But if you're not mortgaging the future to help right now, are you helping yourself? Read in between the lines there.
Well, the thing is, and we talked about this briefly, he was on the pregame on Saturday, and he doesn't look rattled. Like, there are some GMs who they know they're in trouble, and they look rattled. Publicly, Bergevin does not look rattled. And maybe that's what he's pointing to. Look what's coming.
Or does he say, listen, one-goal games are a coin flip. Don't put too much in them. It's cold ice and a rubber puck. Bounce here, bounce there. We're right back in all these games. Our record isn't as bad as it looks right now.
You know what I've heard? I've heard the Canadians are doing a lot of work into or asking a lot of questions about why they can't get top players to come to Montreal.
Tax.
I think that's one thing.
Media.
I think that's another thing. Just the pressure.
You can do nothing about either.
Yep.
Neither are changing.
Well, I think that's it. And I don't know if Bergevin's in trouble or not. I look at him and I don't see a guy who sees himself in trouble the way he carries himself. And he talked about how he believes he's got to try to project a calm attitude to his players. And that's one thing I do believe. If your coach or your GM or your panics, the team is going to panic.
Mm-hmm.
I do think the Canadians have been asking a lot of questions around about what do we have to do to attract top for, like, they've been sitting there with cap room for a couple years now. I think, you know, Carey Price re-signed to stay there. Brendan Gallagher signed to stay there. Max Domi was very happy to be traded there. They've tried to get some of those big free agents, and they can't get them to come there.
Specifically French Canadian.
Well, you know, I mean,
that's an issue.
I remember one player told me that, he was being courted by Montreal, and he asked a player there, and I guess the player had family, the one who was already there had family that owned like a collision shop or something like that, and the Canadians lost, and people would just drive up to the store, and they weren't even customers. They'd be like, what the bleep is wrong with your son last night, or your nephew, or whatever he was.
Yeah,
I wonder if that's one of the reasons that, you know, the Canadians are being patient, is because I think they're looking at it like this is a bigger problem.
Is that why we saw the offer sheet in the summer?
I think so.
One way to get players is offer sheet?
I think so. It's a good point. It's a really good point.
If no one's going to sign, this is how we get players.
Yep. You know, they're always in, like, Jake Gardner turned down their money last year. You know, they were around Matt Duchene. Like, I don't really think that Matt Duchene really wanted to go to Montreal. I think his heart was set on Nashville, but they were around it. I think the Canadians are really struggling with that, and I think ownership recognizes that. I think that Jeff Molson is one of the people asking those questions.
I want to get to Theo Fleury here, but let's do it by talking about the Calgary Flames. With Michael Frolik gone, that opens up cap space for Brad Treliving.
Mm-hmm.
Names that we have heard before include TJ Brody, include Mark Jankowski. What do we expect from Calgary? I don't expect silence and inactivity.
Well, I heard that when he made the trade for Frolik, like, he got a lot of feelers because he came out that night when he held his media conference with the reporters and said, we're going to do something with it. I think he got a lot of interest. I mean, he's got cap room in this league. It's a powerful thing. The one thing I heard is they're not interested in a rental, and it makes sense because they're probably not good enough. Like, there's something going on in Calgary right now. Like, I didn't talk to Treliving when I was I talked to Treliving for the feature we did, but I didn't really get a chance to talk to him about the team. There's a real feeling out there, you know, not only among the media, but I think even some of the scouts and officials from other teams who were there that night when I saw them play the Rangers, that if Calgary, it doesn't end well for Calgary this year, they're going to break up their core.
Like Johnny Gaudreau, Sean Monahan, Mark Giordano?
You know, well, Giordano's going to retire a Flame. Like, I don't see that going anywhere. You know, Monahan's not scoring a ton, but I've heard they're at least happy with the way they asked him to compete and be a little bit harder, and I think they feel that he's attempting to do that, trying to do that. Mm-hmm. The Gaudreau thing is really interesting because I think they're kind of at a loss for the way his season's going. You know, they've talked to him a lot. They tried to work with him. You know, he's on pace for 43 even strength points, I think.
Yeah, I saw that.
Which would be the lowest of, or the second lowest of his career, excuse me, since his rookie season. He's not a power play phenomenon. He's fourth in even strength points the last 2 years behind McDavid, Kucherov, and Kane. That's elite company.
Do you not just look at Gaudreau and say, well, this is just one of those seasons and they happen? Because, Friedge, this time last season, we were talking about the Hart Trophy.
You know, Johnny yes, Gaudreau. But here's the thing, is that the clock is starting to come down with him. He's got 2 years left after this year, right? And at some point in time, Calgary's going to have to make a decision on, A, do we keep him? B, do we think he wants to stay here when he's a UFA? Like, I think they're going to be at a point where they start to have these internal conversations. But there's a real feeling out there that they're not happy with their key guys. And if it doesn't change, they might make some moves.
Interesting. With that, we'll step away. We'll come back with Theo Fleury, ex-Flame, who has a new podcast. That's next on 31 Thoughts, the podcast.
Hey, everybody. I'm Theo Fleury. Welcome to my podcast. I've had many people over the years ask me, well, when are you going to do your podcast? And I say, well, here we go. Here it is.
His pass intercepted by Fleury. Fleury, good move to move into the slot area. He couldn't get a shot away as he was tied up. Fleury gets it again. Likes the shot, but he scores! And listen to the fans.
Talking about making things happen on every shift. Here he gets his first goal. Right in the slot area. Perfect shot. Pass grand through.
When I first came to camp, I was kind of wondering, you know, if I was going to be strong enough or just could take the heavy hitting and that. But, you know, I got hit my very first shift on the ice and, you know, that it didn't hurt. Just more confidence right there. And, you know, I was allowed to wheel. And I don't think it's the size, really. It's just how you use the ice to your advantage. You know, you try to stay away from the big guys, you know, but if you see a chance to get in there, you know, just go.
Here's a breakaway for who else? Theo Fleury, and he scores and does it to the Sharks one more time. Chicago wins.
There's Theo, he's gonna take off, and he's gone. Now watch the quick shot, not a hard shot, quick and well placed.
Find a way to get the puck through. Malakoff in front. Fleury scores! A beautiful deflection. The second one of the game, and the Rangers take the lead.
I never dreamed that I could do so much in so little of time. And oh, I'm just so happy. You know, the guys are great and give me confidence every day I'm out in the ice. And, you know, I feel that, you know, that's a big asset. You know, like the John Tonellis and Lanny McDonald's, guys like that. You know, tell me every day you're playing good. Keep it up. Keep it up.
Elliot, pleased to be joined now by someone who is an ex-NHLer, should probably be in the Hockey Hall of Fame by now, and has started his own podcast. Theo Fleury of the Theo Fleury Podcast joins 31 Thoughts, the podcast. Theo, how are you today? Thanks so much for doing this.
I'm great. Thanks thanks for having me. Did you get everything you needed done down at the rink, Elliot?
I did. Yes, I did. Thank you for asking. I know you're very concerned.
I was. Yeah. Wait. There's always a guy like that on every team.
What? Who's late?
We'd all be on the bus, you know, waiting to go wherever it is we needed to go, and there was always one guy that, you know, was always lagging behind. So.
Didn't the bus leave without them?
No, not usually.
Really?
Sometimes, depending on who's the coach, you know.
So okay, let's start here. So which coach would say to the bus, go, and which coach would say, we're waiting?
So the non-X's and O's guys would leave the guy there, and the X and O guys would wait.
Because there's a pretty famous story that one year when Jacques Lemaire was coaching the Devils, Larry Robinson, who was an assistant coach, was late to the bus. And Jacques Lemaire could see Larry Robinson. The whole bus could see Larry Robinson. And Lemaire ordered the doors closed. and the bus drove off.
I don't know if I would want to be on the other end of that one.
I can recall once here in Toronto, Theo, there was this when Pat Quinn, the late Pat Quinn, was coaching the Maple Leafs. And I believe it was Darcy Tucker was late for the bus and Pat wanted it to go. And Matt Sundin said, "No, Pat, let Darcy come on late. We'll take care of it. We'll deal with it internally, just the players." Does that echo true from your experience that in situations like that, when you played, that was handled within the teammates?
Well, that's how we used to handle it back in the day, for sure. But I don't know what it's like now. But you know what's interesting about being retired is just that. I don't have to worry about missing a flight or missing a bus or being late for practice or any of that stuff. So it's kind of nice to not have to worry about that stuff anymore.
Well, what's the best?
As you know, I've had a very colorful past.
Really?
So, you know.
Yeah.
So, but I can tell you that I never missed a flight, never missed a bus, and never missed a practice. So.
And now you're podcasting. Theo, why podcasts?
Well, as you may or may not know, mental health is, at an all-time high in awareness, where, we all acknowledge the fact that, the majority of us, go through struggles and all that. But, with all that being said, we have the highest awareness around the subject of, mental health and addiction and all this stuff. But on the other side of the coin, we have the highest suicide rates on the planet. And so, the million-dollar question here that I don't think is being answered is, why isn't all of this awareness being turned into action and getting people well so that they don't get to that point of hopelessness where, their only alternative or their only option is to kill themselves. And so, I wanted to create a safe space in society where, I can talk to all different kinds of people from all different walks of life to hopefully get to the answer as to why we have these high suicide rates. And I really believe it's because we have not created a safe space in society yet where we can, talk about suicidal idealizations and, I was at a point where I wanted to kill myself or, whatever it is, and open up this, this new space and this new dialogue where, we are providing hope instead of judging and pointing the finger at and, this doesn't affect me and all this. And, what I find really interesting is that Canadian Mental Health Association says that 1 out of 5 people suffer from mental illness. And I think that's a total hogwash and it's a bunch of BS. And it's actually 5 in 5.
Mm-hmm.
That all of us at some point in our life are going to experience some sort of challenge or issue that when we go through something like that, it leaves the remnants of emotional pain and suffering. And any type of emotional pain and suffering is mental health. And how are we going to overcome this? Well, we're going to overcome it as all of us, not, a few, distinct people out there who are advocating for mental health. I think we all need to be a part of this.
How do you feel these days, Theo?
How do I feel?
Yeah.
I feel probably 80% better. I still struggle with anxiety, panic, depression, all these things. But what's more important is that I do have a set of tools now that when I do get in those situations and in those low points, I have tools now that help me, change my mood very quickly.
What do you do? How do you do that?
Well, I've tried all the magic pills, okay? All the synthetic brain chemistry application, I've tried all that. I had a gun in my mouth 16 years ago because of it. And what I found is that there is, you know, sort of an underground group of people out there who have taken a very holistic approach to mental health. And so meditation, yoga, breathing exercises, getting on the phone, talking to somebody about it. You know, there's all different kinds of holistic approaches that we never hear about, and they have zero side effects. And for me, you know, about 5 years into my sobriety, I was struggling, and I was like, you know, if this is what sobriety is all about, I don't want any part of it. And, you know, what I realized was that in the 12-step programs, the first three steps is all about spirituality. So for the last, I guess, 9 years, I've been on a spiritual journey. And because I do probably 75% of my work in the Aboriginal community in Canada, you know, I started to participate in their spirituality, and it really changed my life and took me to a different level of calmness and peace, happiness, joy, you know, all the things that, you know, I wasn't experiencing before, you know, I decided to, you know, go on a spiritual journey.
You know, there's a lot of people that have, and it's become more acceptable now socially, that have used psychedelics to essentially rewire their hard drive, whether it's ayahuasca ceremony, whether it's dimethyltryptamine, whether it's psilocybin. There's a lot more research and a lot more understanding about it. Has that ever been anything that's interested you, Theo?
Yeah, I've dabbled in it, obviously, a little bit, but I don't think there's enough science yet around it. And, you know, because I wrote my second book with a neuroscientist called Conversation with the Rattlesnake, even as like 5 years ago, we weren't talking about this stuff. And so the data is being compiled now by the science community. And, you know, hopefully, you know, we'll have some a lot more concrete research around, you know, THC and CBD and, you know, all the things that you were talking about. But I like the fact that if I'm going to use something that's going to boost me, that, you know, I do have some scientific data around it, and that there are zero side effects from, you know, me sort of dabbling in that side of the mental health system.
Just wanted to ask you, Theo, how much hockey do you watch now?
Not a lot. You know, I'm on the road 250 days a year speaking now, so it's a little bit more difficult to watch. But, you know, obviously I watch my hometown team, the Calgary Flames, play as much as I can. You know, I do some work with the Flames, game nights for fan experiences. I do probably 12 of those a year, and so, you know, that kind of keeps me around. But other than that, I'm in the field of trauma, mental health, and addiction 24 hours a day, 7 days a week.
Do you play anymore?
I go to Mario Lemieux's Fantasy Camp every year in Pittsburgh, and that's basically the only time I put on my skates.
So. Really? You don't play pickup or anything like that?
I don't know how to play for fun, Elliot.
I respect that, Theo. I can't tell you how much I respect that.
And, you know, there's always one guy out there who thinks there's a NHL contract available, and he looks at me as being a smaller human being, and I have to tell him that if he continues his behavior, I will have to hurt him.
And we know you can. We saw it.
There's always that one guy that that thinks the Zamboni driver is actually a scout and is there with a contract in his hands.
I always remind them, don't look at my point stats. Look at my penalty minutes, 1,800 penalty minutes. And most of those were stick infractions. They weren't fighting majors, so...
The World Junior Championships is always an interesting one for ex-players, players that have played in it. You were, of course, part of the 87 squad, which is, you know, one of the more, you know, interesting World Junior Hockey Championships ever. And the word interesting is doing a lot of work in that sentence. Do you still get a chance to watch the U-20s, the World Juniors?
Absolutely. I watch it religiously. It's probably the thing that I enjoy the most. It's the greatest hockey tournament on the planet. And it was amazing. Quarterfinal, semifinal, and then the final was epic. You know, can you remind me what happened in '87? Because I only remember '88.
There was a guy by the name of Gunter Sabetsky who thought it'd be a good idea to turn some lights out during a skirmish.
Oh, that one, yeah. Well, I forgot because we'd already had like 15 or 20 brawls already during the season in the Western League before that happened. So.
What are some of your fondest memories from that tournament?
Well, let's see. Hockey Canada now goes to the World Junior with probably 100 people.
Mm-hmm.
You know, staff, players, coaches, all that. You know, we went to Communist Moscow in 1988, I think, with less than 30 people.
Hmm.
And we beat the Russians in the same rink where Paul Henderson scored the goal in 1972. And I believe the Russians had a line of Fedorov, McGillney, and Bure that Mark Recchi, Robbie DiMaio, and Adam Graves shut them down. And we beat them right in their own backyard the year after the brawl. And so, you know, that was an incredible experience to be a part of that.
So here's my last one to you, Theo. It's Jeff introduced you as somebody who should be in the Hall of Fame. I've interviewed players before. I remember I always just interviewed Jack Morris, and he would admit it bugged him that he wasn't in. Does it bother you that you're not in, or would it be important for you to be in?
Well, I think it's important for anybody that, you know, had the career that I had to be in the Hall of Fame. But, you know, I always say the work's been done. You know, I can't go back and I can't change anything. You know, my career is my career. And does it bug me? Yeah, absolutely it bugs me. You know, when, you know, I see guys who had similar careers such as myself who are already in there. And what's interesting is that everybody thinks that it was my addiction that ended my career. That is completely false. What ended my career was I could no longer manage my mental health symptoms. You know, I was having panic attacks before games and, you know, my depression was crazy. I had some concussion issues that I never told anybody about towards the end of my career, you know, and so everybody thinks that, you know, it was my addictions that took me out of the game. It was, you know, it was my mental health stuff. And so if I'm being black or whatever you want to call it, because, you know, I had an addiction issue, well then, you know, that argument's out the window because it wasn't that took me out of the game. It was, you know, that every night I laid my head on the pillow, because I never slept for 27 years after my sexual abuse happened because I was molested in a dark room where I could never see my abuser coming at me. And so all of that stuff accumulated towards the end of my career. And, you know, nobody was talking about mental health. Nobody was certainly comfortable with talking about sexual abuse at that time. And so, you know, it was just an accumulation of, you know, all of the experiences that I had as a child and as an adolescent that finally, you know, I can no longer manage any of it. And that's why the end of my career ended the way that it did. And so, you know, I would hope that compassion from the Hockey Hall of Fame voters would at some point come into play in this and realize that just like when they said if Eric Lindros didn't have, you know, multiple concussions, yeah, he was a shoe-in. And I would say the same, you know, in my case, if, you know, I didn't experience sexual abuse as a young adolescent hockey player, I'm sure that my career would have lasted a lot longer and, you know, would have been way more productive than it was.
You're doing some important work, and it's fantastic. Theo, thank you so much for stopping by and sharing some of your thoughts. And as always, in every interview we've ever heard you with or been part of, you're transparent and honest, and it's such an important thing to do. And we thank you for sharing your thoughts on our podcast.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you, Theo.
Theo, that was great.
Thanks, guys.
Thanks, pal.
Sorry I was late.
That's okay. It's okay. You got to buy me dinner when I'm in Toronto. That's all.
You got a deal.
That's going to be on Elliot's tombstone, by the way. Thanks, Theo.
Okay, guys. Take care.
That was Theo Fleury of the Theo Fleury Podcast.
You know, I would just like to say something. I know I'm always late, and I have no problem with Fleury busting my balls for it. I would like to say, in this particular case, it was actually work-related. I was at the morning skate for Winnipeg, Toronto, and I was actually doing work.
But it was always work-related.
So this is not an Elliot Friedman fooling around, being stupid lateness. This one is legitimate.
To me, though, now having worked with and known you for a number of years, you're never late. It's just baked into the pie. That's the way it is. A couple of things before I get to hashtag Ask31. Do you see Mackenzie Blackwood's face after the Ryan Pulock shot? Do you see how that caught him and how that damaged his face behind a mask? You mentioned Pulock in 31 Thoughts for a good reason. Going back to the Western Hockey League, when he played with the Brandon Wheat Kings, this was always a guy who could hammer it.
Mm-hmm.
And you've made this point about All-Star.
Well, we're both believers in they should be inviting specialists to this. Like,
yes.
I want to see Char and Weber go head-to-head one more time. Weber will be at the All-Star game this year. But I want to see Chara get one more chance before he retires. I want to see and they should bring a guy like Pulock in to challenge them. He uses a 112 flex, which is basically a crowbar. He joked that he's tried a higher one, but he can't get a wrist shot away with it. And I asked him, would you want to go? And he goes, I'd love to try it.
There are some guys that want to go to this.
Why not do it?
You have a quick thought on Ovi not going?
You know, first of all, I like that Dylan Larkin apologized. I thought that was really well done. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, everybody is trying to grow the game, and you can talk about the All-Star being a joke, but when players openly disparage it like that, it's just bad. Because it damages something of yours. So I liked Larkin apologizing, and I know he probably didn't mean anything bad by it in the first place. It's just not the way he's wired. You know, the Ovi thing, I always wonder if this is Olympic related.
Because he didn't go, this is his protest?
Yeah. I've
wondered that before in the past when he's not wanted to do NHL things. When he's balked at the idea of helping to promote the NHL.
Because he's always been so helpful. We've talked about this. When he came over to the league, he jumped into everything.
Yes. And he could barely speak the language.
But he did it anyway.
I know.
He did everything. So I generally don't get annoyed at him for this because I think he understands his role. To me, there's something that forces him not to like this. And I do wonder if it's the whole Olympic thing. You know, guys who played with him a couple years ago in Washington, they said that watching the Olympics and not being there really bothered him. Bothered him a lot.
I can see that.
You know, obviously this is a guy with a lot of pride in Russia. And it wouldn't surprise me. You know, I wish that what could happen is he would go and just kiss babies.
Just go sign some autographs. Just be there. I'm the same.
You know, that's what I wish, but I refuse to believe that this guy who has always been spectacular when it comes to promoting the sport and his team suddenly wants no part of that. It's not the way he's wired.
Speaking of Russian hockey players, Igor Shesterkin.
Yes, first win.
It didn't start off great.
No.
With the two goals, Comfort and McKinnon, right off the bat, we thought, okay. Way to feed this guy to the high-powered offense of the Avalanche. But by the end of the game, that was fantastic.
Oh, yeah.
Like, real good for each.
And I'll tell you, so Georgiev is no longer waiver exempt.
Correct.
So I think the Rangers are going to feel this out. And what are they going to do? You know, it's been kind of a weird ride for them because they had Kravtsov go back, and now he's back. Mm-hmm. They have Anderson overseas. So I'm sure a little bit is we've got to show Shestyorkin we're serious and he's going to get a chance to play. But three goalies is not fun. And I think they're going to feel it out. They're not rushing to trade Georgiev. The other one is, you know, you just check. Is there any chance Lundqvist, and he's not going anywhere.
Not a chance.
So I guess they're just going to have to deal with this for a little bit.
We are going to have to get an official pronouncer on it.
Shestyorkin?
Because in the NHL pronunciation guide, it's Shestyorkin. And that's what John Forslund was calling him on Tuesday night.
A shout by Comfort denied by Shestyorkin. MacKinnon winds it in. Kadri, good play. Landeskog. Shestyorkin, what a save there. Has he got across? Centers one. Belmar. Shestyorkin, outstanding. Down low. Girard. Jost again. Shestyorkin said no to that one.
Now, there have been KHL translations that will tell you, no, it's Shestyorkin. Shestyorkin. There we go.
You got it.
Settle on it, because we're all going to have to get used to his name, because this guy looks fantastic. And with that, let's get to some hashtag Ask31s. And our first one comes from Keith Olbermann.
Okay.
What with Shestyorkin would you trade Georgiev, Hank, Valiquette, Weeks, Talbot, Jockeman, Vilmuir, Richter, Van Beesbrugge, Gump, Rayner, Aiken, Ed Shabbat, John Ross, Roach, and even Dave Tatarin? I was texting with Keith Tuesday night during the Ranger game, and he is bought and paid for now for the new Russian goaltender. This is the plan, though. Like, this is the plan.
In a perfect world, you know, Lundqvist has one more year left on his contract. You assume that's it. And 2 years from now, it's Georgiev and Shestyorkin, right? That's your team.
But there's three goalies there to get
there. Well, that's what I'm saying. Like, in a perfect world, that's what you're doing.
In a perfect world, the three-goalie system works.
Yes.
In the real world, it doesn't. Well, everyone always says, well, we're going to draw all mature here. We're going to make it. Doesn't.
Well, you know, even Comrie last week when I did the piece with him, he talked about how tough it was to have three goalies in Arizona. So this is New York. Imagine what that's like with all the media. Well, the other thing too there is, you know, Jeff, like, you got to make sure it works with this kid, right? Like, he has one start.
Yeah.
You never know. He's going to have his ups and downs. He's going to have his tough moments. I think you still have time. You know, I'll tell you this. I do know of one team. I know they were looking at Brown with goalies, and I said, have you thought about Georgiev? And, you know, they said, you know, like, they don't think he's available because he's in the Rangers' long-term plans. We'll see. I don't think anybody is untradeable, but I do think the Rangers do look at this with a long-term view.
From Andrew Utaro, is it likely the Sabres make another move in the next 2 to 3 weeks?
They're trying to do Rodriguez. Like, he's asked for a trade. They're trying to accommodate that. I think they would, but it took them this long to get to this point, right? And we knew what they wanted to do. And that's not me ripping Jason Botterill. I think that's me saying that simply they did not want to make a move that made no sense for them.
From Dale Hunter's Helmets, this is interesting. Couldn't see it happening for fear of injury, but here we go. Given the attention given to player fitness training, how about a CrossFit type contest during All-Star Weekend? One player could earn the title of fittest player in the NHL.
See, I think they should do that in the summer.
I think it should be an off. I'm like that summer and summer programming.
I would
I'm
love to
that.
See, like, I don't know how old Dale Hunter's Helmet is, but you're my age, and so you remember, you know, Battle of the Network Stars.
Totally. That was a great show. And I loved it.
I still
it.
Watch those things. On. If you've never watched it,
YouTube it.
Go get, and yes. You will not believe it. Like, you will not believe that this show existed.
Team Happy Days. Team
it was ABC versus NBC versus CBS.
So good.
Howard Cosell would interview people like it was a serious thing. It was brilliant television. I would love to see that in the off season. You take everybody and their significant other to somewhere nice and you have a competition. When we worked at the Score, they had the CFL quarterback challenge. They did it for a year at the Score, I remember. And it was, they brought all the quarterbacks in the off season to like this quarterback obstacle course, like basically throw the football through the tire and a whole bunch of drills.
Yeah.
And we didn't think much of it. This is going to sound like I'm making fun of our place. I wasn't, but there were some things that ended up on our air because nobody else wanted it, right? and we took this thing and it became a hit. And I think the evil telecom stole it after year one because they realized it was a hit. It was really good. I think people would watch that. And I think the personality would come out. Like in the piece, I talk about Beauvillier.
Yes.
So I go up to him and I ask him, I got a note, did Lou Lamoriello say anything? And he was kind of embarrassed. He's like, he's kind of like, I don't know, should I have done it? And I said, you know, you can only do this thing once. You can't do it every week. But people loved it. It was fun. It showed that hockey's got some personality. It's fun. I think if you did something like that, like the CrossFit athlete or the Battle of the Network Stars or whatever you want to do, like I'll tell you, I think the NHL should have a player cooking show. Like they talk about,
you've talked about this.
Like
yeah.
they have to have this stuff.
From Brian Suarez, do you think the NHL should lower the draft pick compensation on offer sheets to encourage more teams to use them? The top tier of compensation for first rounders seems too high.
Well, of course, you and I would like that, Brian, but the league doesn't want that because they don't like offer sheets.
So that ends there. Jonas Larson, will Elias Andersson ever play in the NHL again?
Yes, I think he will. I think
this season?
I don't know about this year. See, you saw those quotes Ufa Bedin, the great reporter, had. Here's the strange thing about that. Like, it's obvious that there's an estrangement here between the Rangers and the player.
Yeah.
But, you know, he said he was suspended, and he also said he's injured.
Injured.
So it sounds like to me that he needs a bit of a mental health break. And, you know, we just talked about everything with Fleury.
Mm-hmm.
I see no problem with a young man who's still a young man getting a mental health break. I think it's good for him and it's good for the team. I don't know if he's back this year, but I think he will be back in the NHL. Somebody will give him a chance.
I think more young players will start doing that. Timothy Liljegren did that before he was drafted. There was the draft year where he had mono, but before that he had taken time off because he was exhausted. And I think we're going to start to see more younger players do that. Chaney Aitchison. I hope I said that right, Chaney. Other than the rumors about having interest in Kovalchuk and Williams, have the Bruins inquired about anyone else to strengthen their top six? You know, I watched that Edmonton game on Saturday afternoon.
Yep.
And watched Bruce Cassidy mangle the lines, you know, coils up in the Pasternak spot and wanting more from DeBrusque and Krejci and changing it all around. And I'm thinking to myself as I'm watching the game, man, would Chris Kreider look good on this Bruins team?
My opinion is changing almost on the day on Kreider.
Okay.
Because I've had guys tell me that they think the Rangers are starting to think more and more about do they keep him?
Resign him.
And again, this will all play out over the next 6 weeks, but you get rid of him, it's hard to replace.
Big, strong guy that can move his feet?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And you need those guys.
Plays with an edge? Yeah.
You need those guys. And I could see it. You know, they're starting to get some things going offensively. Their top couple of lines have some chemistry. Now, I think one of the biggest things is how much is Zibanejad going to cost them?
Zibanejad's been flat out great.
He's fantastic.
He's legit number one center in the NHL.
Fantastic.
And he's following it up.
So that's the number one thing you've got is how much is Zibanejad. I think that's actually a bigger question than Kreider is. How much Zibanejad's going to cost you. But I've had some guys tell me that they think the Rangers are thinking more and more, at least about, can we keep him? Now, I'll tell you this. I do think Boston, if they wanted to, could do a deal for Toffoli almost at any time. I think they know they've got that in their hip pocket.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, do you do that or do you wait for Kreider?
Back to the Rangers quickly. I look at that team and because I don't cheer for a specific team. I cheer for fun teams. I love watching certain teams certain years. The Rangers are getting real close to being real fun. Like, when's the last time, and maybe the answer is Jaromir Jagr, the Rangers had a player as good as Artemi Panarin?
Who?
It's Jagr. I was thinking about this a while ago. Like, when's the last time a player that good was on the home side at MSG? Jagr. That's it.
Yeah.
This team is
And he was an MVP level player.
Yeah. Want to finish up with one thing. Justin Williams. 1 year contract.
Yep.
The Carolina Hurricanes $700,000. I like that it was Coburg Media that broke the story. Okay? I love that. But would it not have been the ultimate storm surge?
For him to go out last night?
As the storm surge.
It does seem like kind of a missed opportunity. By the way, I got to tell you, someone told me that negotiation was a grind.
Oh, yeah?
Like, someone said to me that you would think that was the easiest negotiation ever because Justin Williams wanted to go back to Carolina, and they wanted him, and Brendan Moore wanted him. But, like, Tom Dundon is a grinder. And everybody, that was a grind. That was, it wasn't even someone directly involved.
I don't know,
Someone from another team told me that they heard you would not believe how tough that negotiation was.
No, I watched the game last night. I saw them in the suite yucking it up, all buddies, and Dundon's showing them something about a golf swing and their buddies and their pals.
Well, because you know how, you know how it goes. There's business and there's pleasure, right?
All right. Anything to add from our first week back? 31 Thoughts, the podcast is now back on our regular schedule, and we promise to be better next week, right?
Yes. I was achy this week. I don't know.
I wasn't good either. Let's face it. But, you know, mediocre man is always his best. He's in mid-season form. He's insulting our producer. Thanks to Amal Dalich for putting everything together and making it sound listenable in your ears. We will leave you now. And thanks to Theo Fleury for stopping by, and check out his podcast, Theo Fleury's Podcast. We leave you with one of the hardest working Canadian musicians who's about to hit the road on his Freedom Winter Tour. We featured Eamon McGrath earlier on this season on the pod, but we need to get the title track from his 7th studio album on the show. This is Guts, Eamon McGrath.